You could all please turn to Matthew 27. Today's cover verses 11 to 26. Now, before I read this, you need to realize Pilate was placed in a position of judging a guiltless prisoner. The prisoner had never committed a crime in his entire life. He was completely innocent. There was no fault to be found in him. But While Pilate could find no reason to condemn him, he was swayed by public opinion. So, again, Matthew 27, verses 11 to 26. Meanwhile, Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Yes, it is as you say," Jesus replied. When he was accused by the chief priests and the elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate asked him, "Don't you hear the testimony they are bringing against you?" But Jesus made no reply, not even to a single charge, to the great amazement of the governor. Now, as the governor's custom at the feast to release a prisoner chosen by the crowd, at the time they had a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. So when the crowd had gathered, Pilate asked them, "Which one do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called Christ?" For he knew it was out of envy that they had handed Jesus over to him. While Pilate was sitting on the judge's seat, his wife sent him a message. "Don't have anything to do with that innocent man, for I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him." But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas and to have Jesus executed. "Which of the two do you want me to release to you?" asked the governor. "Barabbas," they answered. "What shall I do then with Jesus, who is called Christ?" Pilate asked. They all answered, "Crucify him." "Why, what crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him." When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead an uproar was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. "I am innocent of this man's blood," he said. "It is your responsibility." All the people answered, "Let his blood be on us and on our children." Then he released Barabbas to them while he had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified.
It's important that we be reminded that this whole sequence that Jesus is enduring on this difficult, treacherous, agonizing path to the cross, it's all part of his plan, his work to make salvation possible. Now, just a few minutes ago, we sang, "I should have been crucified." I suppose Barabbas could have said that. He's the one that was released. But each one of us could also say that.
So these four Gospels all contribute. And when we look at the big picture, we get some additional information that's not included here in Matthew. And so we'll look into that a little bit as we go along. One thing that's not mentioned here is the fact that Jesus came before Pilate. He was there for a little while, and then Pilate had this brainstorm. "I'm not really finding any guilt here. I think I'll send him over to Herod." Herod was in the region, and so that's what he did. Well, when Jesus went before Herod, Herod asked him some questions. Jesus didn't give him any answers. Herod was disappointed. He sent him back to Pilate. And we read a very interesting statement about this. You know, these two political leaders had been at odds for quite some time. They did not get along. They did not like each other. But here they had an experience. They both were faced with a king that they couldn't figure out. And somehow, that was a bridge. Pretty negative bridge, but it specifically tells us in Luke that those two officials were now friends, or they were, having good connection. But we pick up back with Pilate then in our text today. It's so interesting to notice that as this whole thing unfolds, right from the beginning and just every little bit, there are lies. Just lies, 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 and more lies that are being used by the religious leaders to try to get what they want. So Jesus, the way, the truth, and the life, was about to die for liars. His death, burial, and resurrection was sufficient to cover the sins of every liar that ever lied. Well, Pilate was just amazed by what he was seeing, what he was hearing in the situation. Now, Jesus said very little, but when he did speak, his words were profound. And Pilate was gripped by them, shocked by them, amazed by them. John records some of the words that Jesus said to Pilate. He said, "My kingdom is not of this world." Now, if my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm. Therefore, Pilate said to him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say correctly that I am a king. For this I have been born, and for this I have come into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, "I find no guilt in him." What is truth? That's a profound question coming from a political leader. So much of the time, truth seems to be relative when you're dealing with political leaders. You know, they'll say one thing over here, and then another thing over here. And you don't have to think very far back into the past to remember some things like that. As campaigns were being conducted in this country, the idea is you tell people what they want to hear to get the votes that you want. And so Pilate was very familiar with that. You give people the information that they want so you can get what you want. Put a spin on things so it turns out your way. I was reminded of my 8th grade history teacher. He told us a story one day about putting spin on information. He said there was a race between a man from the U.S. and a man from the Soviet Union. And after the race was done, the U.S. News Service reported that the U.S. man came in first. And the Soviet news agency reported that the U.S. man came in next to last. These people over here are awake. But that's just the way you spin it, put the emphasis on it, it makes it sound completely different than it really is. So Pilate's here, he's face to face with the author of truth, the originator of all things, and he is faced with the one who can't lie. It's impossible, because Jesus is the truth. From John's account, we also know that Jesus spoke clearly to Pilate about his origin, Jesus' origin, where he came from. And he also spoke about how Pilate got his authority. You wouldn't have any authority unless it came from above, Jesus told him. And Pilate was very shaken, very amazed by these words coming from this prisoner. He'd never seen a prisoner like this. Never. Every other one that he had seen had a pretty narrow spectrum of things on their mind. Either they were wanting to survive, wanting to somehow find a way out of this, or they were wanting to do whatever it took to promote a rebellion that they were a part of. But this prisoner was not preoccupied with those kinds of things. He was totally at peace within himself. And he didn't have that look in his eyes of either terror or defiance. There just wasn't that. This was different. Pilate had never seen anyone like this. This prisoner was totally under control. Pilate was amazed. He was amazed at his innocence. You know, there had been many accusations that had been hurled at Jesus. When this all started back in the garden and then at the home of Caiaphas, the high priest, there were lots of accusations brought. You might remember this phrase from chapter 26. The chief priests and the whole council kept trying to obtain false testimony against Jesus so they might put him to death. And then another verse says that many false witnesses came forward. It doesn't give us a number. It just says many. And the things they were bringing just didn't stick. How you can't bring an accusation against someone who's perfect and have it stick. But they were working at it. So now to Pilate, they come and they work on the angle of political savvy. They're going to come with things that would get a politician's attention. Luke tells us they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, our king." Misleading the nation. Forbidding to pay taxes. Of course, these things are not true. The thing that is true is that he referred to himself as a king. And then a bit later, they were insisting, "Well, he stirs up the people. He's teaching all over Judea, starting from Galilee, even as far as this place. He's dangerous. His teaching's dangerous. We've got to get rid of him." So this attempt was being made to convince Pilate that this is a threat to Roman rule. Look at John 19:12. "As a result of this, Pilate made efforts to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, 'If you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar.'" So they're trying to put the pressure on Pilate too. "Everyone who makes himself out to be a king opposes Caesar." So this prisoner, this Jesus, he is opposing the rule of Caesar. You need to do away with him. He's dangerous. That's what they're trying to do. Of course, Pilate could quickly discern that Jesus was not a danger. He was not a threat. Specifically told us in our text, Brother Mike read for us, that he could tell what was going on. There was envy. That was at the root of this. It wasn't, they didn't sincerely care about any kind of a threat to Rome. Actually, they were probably desiring someone to overthrow Rome. In the 4 or 5 years previously, when Pilate had been the governor, he had had several very difficult situations with the Jewish people. He made some bad decisions. He tried to push his agenda, and they resisted. And they made it clear that they were committed to their tradition, to their religion, to their people, and not to Rome. So now, these same people that were totally resistant to Pilate's efforts, they were now saying, well, now we're really concerned about this possible threat to Rome. Just another hypocritical, contradictory statement that they made. Well, Pilate wanted, really, to release innocent Jesus. That's really what he wanted to do. And he tried multiple times with a couple different ideas, but the crowd was not backing down. They were not budging. As you well know, politicians are sometimes able to convince people of their ideas and be very persuasive with what they say, with how they say it. But in this case, that wasn't happening. Nobody was backing down. Nobody was budging. So Pilate thought maybe he could make a deal. So he comes up with this idea about Barabbas. You know, it's been a tradition to release a prisoner during the time of the feast of the Passover. And so maybe they'll go for that. Well, that failed. The religious leaders incited the crowd to just call out for the release of Barabbas. And so that really didn't go anywhere. There was significant manipulation going on here in this whole situation on both sides. The religious leaders were lying about Jesus. They were lying about their allegiance to Rome. They were lying about their supposed concern about the danger to Rome. They just wanted to put Pilate in a bad spot where he had to do what they wanted him to do. And so Pilate's efforts to make a deal, to make a compromise, to work something out, just weren't going anywhere. Now John informs us that part of the way through this sequence, that Pilate went so far as to have Jesus scourged, and then he brought him out again, possibly thinking that maybe they would have sympathy, but that was to no avail. And this scourging that would go on was terrible punishment. The prisoner was tied in a position where his body was stretched out, and these short-handled whips with leather thongs and sharp things embedded in the end of them, metal or bone, would just tear the skin off of the person that was getting flogged with them. It was awful. Some people didn't even survive that. They died as a result of that. You know, severe blood loss, sometimes internal organs would even be exposed because of this violent, aggressive scourging. And of course, Jesus was so weakened by that that he wasn't able to carry his own cross later, which is not surprising. But Pilate still is thinking, well, maybe after we do that, then the crowd will be appeased. They'll back down a little bit, but that was not the case. Here we see that verse in John that talks about Pilate coming out and giving him another chance. "Behold, I'm bringing him out to you so that you may know that I find no guilt in him." Jesus then came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." Here he is. Behold the man. He's not a threat. He's innocent. I find no fault in him. But the crowd just kept on demanding that he be killed. And of course, they did have Pilate in a rough spot. He wanted to be politically correct. He wanted to do what would look the best for him on his governor resume. You know, you got to keep the emperor happy, or there can be serious problems. Incidentally, later on, he was removed from that position because of other bad decisions that he made. His secular history tells us that he didn't have a real long term as governor. So he's being pressured to go along with these leaders, and he's being told that, well, you know, it's your duty to deal with this evildoer. John 18:30 tells us that they answered and said to him, "If this man were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him to you. Don't you know anything?" is kind of the idea. Pressure, pressure, pressure. You got to deal with him. He's an evildoer. That's why we brought him to you. And then in John 19:12, they make this big statement about loyalty. Pilate still making efforts to release him. The Jews cried out saying, "If you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar. Everyone who makes himself out to be a king opposes Caesar." So Pilate, you're no friend of Caesar. We're going to get you in deep weeds if you don't do what we want. So the pressure just kept mounting. They cried out, "Away with him," in John 19:15. "Crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Liars? But that's what they said, and the pressure was on Pilate. And as we know, Pilate caved in to the pressure of the time. Well, Pilate had concern in all this. He had concern for his city. With thoughts of a possible riot in mind, Pilate wanted to bring about a peaceful resolution to a very tense situation. Now, it's so interesting. Remember back to chapter 26. The chief priests and the elders, when they were scheming how they're going to go about arresting Jesus and getting rid of Jesus, they said, "Now let's do it, but not during the feast of the Passover. Not then, because there might be a riot." Well, now, the game plan all changed. They ended up taking him during the Passover, and now they're the ones causing the riot. It's a little bit of irony there. They were the ones causing the riot. This is just one more in the long list of hypocritical actions by those religious leaders. Well, Pilate had some level of concern for Jesus. You know, he was seeing him as an innocent man. Right in the middle of this whole event, he gets word from his wife warning that he shouldn't have anything to do with this innocent, righteous man. "I've suffered much because of a dream about him," she says. So Pilate is getting pressure from two different fronts. He's obviously getting huge pressure from the crowd, from the religious leaders, saying, you know, if you're easy on this prisoner, then you're no friend to Caesar. And then he's getting a report from his wife that this is serious. You should not do this. But he wanted to try to appease everybody. And so he went through the ceremony of washing his hands, saying that, well, I'm off the hook now, which is not true. He's not off the hook. This ritual very likely ties into a Jewish ritual from the Mosaic Law. There was a provision to demonstrate innocence in the case of a mysterious death. A mysterious death. Interesting. It's not clear how much Pilate knew about that tradition, that history. It's not a tradition, actually. It's spelled out in Deuteronomy. But he wanted to make a point that he was innocent. But he stopped short of defending the innocent one. He thought he could be neutral. Now, this is what he was really the most concerned about. He was most concerned about his status. And he had some level of concern about his city and some level of concern about his prisoner. But really, what he wanted at the end of it all was to turn out looking good in Rome's eyes. And he really wanted to try to appease everybody, make as many people pleased with him as possible. Now, that would be a political maneuver, but he could not be neutral. He thought he could, but when it comes to Jesus, you can't be neutral. There are some things where neutrality is okay. Neutral colors are nice because they don't clash with anything else. Neutral on your car transmission means nothing's going to happen. You won't go forward, you won't go backwards. But it's an important setting. You have to have that for the overall function of the vehicle. There's even a few countries that are neutral. Not many, but there are a few. But when it comes to Jesus, there is not such a thing as neutrality. You can't say, well, I can take him or leave him. It doesn't work. Either you're for him or you're against him. Jesus himself said, he who is not with me is against me. So it's this side or this side. For him, against him. You can't sit on the fence. It doesn't work. That's what Pilate tried to do. You know, he could see that there was something different about this prisoner, but he was not willing to totally go there, to totally commit himself. He just wasn't. He wasn't willing to risk losing his position and power to defend him. It was just a lot more convenient to go along with the angry mob. And that's what he did. So when Pilate was talking to the mob, you might recall in verse 22, he said, then what shall I do with Jesus, who is called the Christ? What shall I do? And of course, the response at that time was crucify him. And at that time, there was widespread rejection of Jesus. The good news, though, is that later many believed. And I'm sure that there were seeds sown in this whole time. People just were amazed at how this was going. And I can't believe that this and that and how he responded and how he acted and how he looked and what he did. You know, he spoke kindly to people around him as he's suffering amazing agony. He's thinking about the people around him. His mother, the thief. We'll look at some more of these things next week. But later, many believed. It tells us in Acts chapter 6 that many of the priests believed. Wow, That's worth taking note of. Many of these priests believed. We don't have any further information about Pilate's wife. But you brainstorm a little bit and you come to the conclusion she could have believed later on. It's possible. She was convinced that this was an innocent, righteous man. She sounded fearful. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. She could have gotten to that point later on. We don't know. Someday we'll find out how she ended up. But the point is, many believed, many did not believe. There's only two options. Pilate himself tried to be neutral. You can't do it. Either you're for him or against him. Reject him or trust him. There is not a neutral zone. It does not exist. So when you're confronted with the question of what will you do with Jesus, what exactly will you do? What will you do with Jesus?